accusations directly at her. Baldwin really stayed above the fray for much of the debate. And the one time she did get into it, I thought she delivered a line that really resonated about, you know, getting into somebody's personal life. And so I think that was definitely a standout moment. I thought also the question on abortion rights, where their moderators, you know, that I thought was one of the stronger moments from the moderators, where they repeated some questions back to Hovde, saying that he, you know, didn't answer the question, and again asked him to address some of that more directly. And so I thought, you know, there were a couple of moments where you know, you could really see the clear difference between the two candidates.
Yeah, I also thought it was interesting. Eric Hovde's answer to the PFAS question turned into a statement about government spending, which
seems a little odd, right?
Well, it's what candidates do when they don't have an answer to the question.
Right.
You just wing it, and you hit your points that you feel are your strongest.
Our great team, Jamie Martinson and Corey Hartman and Luke Mathers, and I think who else has been? Ms. Rizomer is on that as well. All kinds of people helping us out with some of these cuts, Terry. Should we take a listen to some of those?
Absolutely.
Though? Maybe start with this one, if we could, please, Mr. Zomers. Aaron Zomers on the board with us tonight. The line I think that will stick out in a lot of headlines tomorrow. Here is Senator Baldwin responding to Eric Hovde when he went after her partner on her investments.
Well, first I need to talk about what Eric Hovde just said. Eric Hovde should stay out of my personal life. And I think I speak for most Wisconsin women that he should stay out of all of our personal lives.
That was succinct. She was clearly ready for that attack with an answer. And Eric Hovde, I thought, kind of set himself up for that type of a thing, Dan. You're a journalist by trade, spent time in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, launched the great and popular Recombobulation area. If you're looking for a headline tomorrow, I would think that would be one of the ones you want to choose from.
That was certainly a standout. That was certainly a standout for the debate. And I also want to go back to one of the moments that you mentioned with about PFAS. You know, Tammy Baldwin is the type of senator where I don't think she is necessarily, you know, the sparkling orator, that she's not the Barack Obama type of politician necessarily, but she really gets into the weeds on a lot of these issues. And I thought the PFAS contamination question really displayed that. And she, you know, talked about the details of what, you know, communities were facing in La Crosse. She talked about the French Island issue with the people using water bottles and how that was funded by the bipartisan infrastructure law. And conversely, the first thing that Eric Hovde mentioned when asked about PFAS contamination was that he lives on a lake.
Right.
I mean, and then his answer could not have been more vague, more broad, you know, just the, you know, kind of you mentioned briefly touching on, you know, some sort of government regulations or whatever it might be, where you really see that Baldwin is a very detail oriented senator. And I thought that question really showed that pretty stark display.
You're right, absolutely right. Eric Hovde admitted that, yeah, he is against some of these things that Senator Baldwin is for when it comes to clean water, but then tried to, as you say, defend it by saying, well, because it raises the debt so far, and a lot of independent people, nonpartisan folks, have looked at this and seen the debt actually went up during Republican and Donald Trump control during Trump's administration compared to the last 4 years under Biden-Harris. So, if you're really concerned about debt as a MAGA Republican, shouldn't you be looking at your own former president and the guy at the top of the ticket on the GOP side, Dan?
Yeah, and I think the bipartisan infrastructure law is revealing to how partisan so many Wisconsin Republicans have been. You know, this was it's in the name. It was a bipartisan bill, but there were no Wisconsin Republicans who voted for that bill. And mm-hmm. over and over again, we hear, you know, Tammy Baldwin bringing back funding for, you know, PFAS contamination or building a new bridge or addressing all different kinds of things that bipartisan infrastructure law has gone toward. There are no, you know, the other Wisconsin senator, Ron Johnson, is never in the mix for any of those kinds of things. And it seems like Hovde would be more of a senator that would be like Ron Johnson, and certainly not the type of Wisconsin senator that would reach across the aisle or, you know, really try to get things done the way that Baldwin has.
Terry Bell, allow me if I could, while I was a little critical of the moderators of the debate up front, and I will stand by that, I thought there was a moment tonight that really showed a contrast between the two candidates and I think helped voters coming to this tonight to actually learn something. Dan Schaefer, I want your opinion on this as well. And that was the subject of Ukraine. And we've got this queued up. We have a part of Senator Baldwin's answer and then going to Eric Hovde. Let's do the Baldwin answer first on Ukraine.
You know, this conflict is truly about democracy versus dictatorship. And we have to stand on the side of democracy. Vladimir Putin is a dictator. He illegally invaded a sovereign democratic nation, and the free world stood up to Ukraine's defense. That's what's at stake here. If Putin were allowed to run through Ukraine without our backing the Ukrainian troops, who's next? A NATO country? Poland? And that would mean U.S. boots on the ground. We need to stay the course, but it seems that Donald Trump doesn't know the difference between our allies and our enemies. And Eric Hovde stands with him and would have voted against the legislation to fund Ukrainians' weaponry.
Terry Bell, keep me honest. There were two different kind of parts to the Hovde answer. The question, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, on Ukraine was, would you continue to support the funding in the Ukraine war against Russia, correct?
Right.
And Eric Hovde kind of danced around it the
first
time.
Well, he started out by saying that he thinks that Vladimir Putin is an evil person, but then he raised some questions about, you know, how the money and any aid that the United States sends to Ukraine is being handled.
To the moderator's credit, she brought it back and said, you know, Mr. Hovde, you really didn't, again, restated the question. Right. And here now we get the actual down to the nuts and bolts answer to the question from Eric Hovde. Would he indeed support continuing to support funding for the Ukraine war against Russia?
Do I think that Vladimir Putin is an absolutely evil man? Absolutely. But I think we need to try to find a way to get to peace. Sadly, what's happening in Ukraine is we're wiping out generations of their people and turning a lot of their cities into rubble. And while I was supportive of Ukraine at first, the amounts of tens of billions of dollars that have gone to Ukraine that are not accountable causes great concern for me. So I don't think we should continue to fund endlessly money into
Thank
Ukraine.
Thank you, Mr. Hovde.
Dan Schaefer, political editor. Myself, as a former Republican, left the party in 2011. I came up during the era of Reagan and the first Bush. You would have never heard a Republican giving an answer like you just heard Eric Hovde tonight on Ukraine.
Certainly not. And it is revealing of, I think, where the Republican Party is on this issue and has been drifting toward. You know, and I thought Baldwin's response on this was an important one, too. She, mm-hmm. you know, talked about wanting to seek peace in the region as well, but mentioned that without this type of support that the United States have been giving, it would be lead to boots on the ground and whether Russia would be attacking NATO allies. She clearly has a much better grasp of the issues on this one than Hovde does, when it seems like it's just kind of, you know, trying to thread the needle on some conservative talking points where, you know, you're criticizing Vladimir Putin, but also kind of going where a number of the, you know, kind of more MAGA wing of the Republican Party has gone, where it's just like, yeah, we don't need to be part of the international community. More of this, you know, just kind of, you know, that what they call America first when it's really America alone. And so I think, you know, again, it was a clear contrast between the two candidates here. And I think what Baldwin was saying about, you know, the real threats that would be there if not for the United States and the international community supporting Ukraine after this invasion, I think it was a really important response.
I mean, Tammy Baldwin's response, in my opinion, on Ukraine could have come out of any Republican U.S. senator back in the 80s and 90s and even into the 2000s. I mean, there was nothing that I'd heard out of her tonight on Ukraine that is not mainstream Republican foreign policy apparently an era gone by. And what you heard from Hovde tonight would have been on the other side of the aisle 20 years ago.
Yeah, and he also talked about the Ukraine invasion in the context of the Afghanistan.
Yes,
you know,
thank you.
Pulling out of Afghanistan. You know, I thought that was, you know, it's just, it seemed like a reach. It seemed like a real reach to connect those. And I get the point that he's trying to make is that, you know, by making that move that, you know, maybe emboldened people around the world. I just don't really see it that way. And then, you know, we've heard from Republicans and the Trump campaign in particular talking about, you know, no new wars and all of that during the campaign. Well, and then at the same time, they're, you know, have one of their biggest criticisms of the Biden foreign policy was getting out of a war.
Right.
So, you know, there's a certain level of hypocrisy there as well.
I think if anything was anticipated tonight, if one thing that people may have been interested to hear was Eric Hovde's answer to his changing positions on reproductive rights over the years. And that's been a bone of contention in fact-checking different claims as to what he does stand for now. And he gave an answer to the question of, or this is his response to the question of, would he support codifying Roe versus Wade?
I think I did. I said it has come back to the state, and I think we as a state should resolve this issue with a referendum where everybody gets a right to vote. The voters get a right to vote. I get the right to vote. I clarified where my position is, and that is I believe that women should have a right to choose early on in their pregnancy, but there comes a point in time where a baby can be born healthy and alive, and I think it's unconscionable to terminate that child's life.
I thought, Terry and Dan, this was one of the points that really stuck out for me from Hovde's responses that just is simply, I mean, that part was his non-answer part, but earlier on, he again brought up this absolute proven lie from Republican MAGA candidates that Tammy Baldwin, he tried to allege, supports abortion up to and after birth. We've heard this from Trump. It is a lie. It doesn't happen. We've had people like Dr. Lyerly on this network. She's now running for Congress in the 8th District, by the way. But OBGYNs have clearly said that what we're talking about here are women who are pregnant, who intend to have the child, and through the most god-awful, horrendous, I would never wish it on anyone's circumstances, something happened, a medical type of emergency, where basically the fetus dies in the womb or is on the verge of that, and it's a choice between taking that a fetus or the mother dying. That is legally, technically, by the book, a medical abortion. And to try to insinuate that Tammy Baldwin or any Democrat supports post-birth abortion is simply not true. Dan Schaefer, keep me honest.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. And I think it just these Republican attacks that bring up that point over and over again is it's just so off base. And I think the American people understand that and women understand that and understand that there is complexity involved in pregnancy and that you need those decisions not to be made by politicians, but to be made by doctors, by professionals. And I think, you know, there's another aspect of this, too. And I think that's worth diving into a little bit. So he talked about this desire for a referendum on this issue in the state of Wisconsin, right? We've heard this from a number of Republicans. We heard this from Ron Johnson 2 years ago when he was running for re-election. We've heard this from Robin Voss at the state level. Look, it's not currently an option under state law to have a referendum to set policy. It would be great if we did. Right. If we had a referendum on abortion in this state, I have a feeling I would know where it would go because you see the polling, you see the issues that jump out, you know, look at the latest Supreme Court race.
What's the latest poll on that, Marquette? 60%+?
Oh, it's more than that. I think it's like a 70-80% issue that people, you know, see that there should be a right to an abortion in the state of Wisconsin. But this option that Republicans continue to push over and over again. And again, Ron Johnson did it throughout his campaign. Eric Hovde did it throughout his campaign. The media is not doing a good job at holding these candidates to account on this issue because this is currently not an option under Wisconsin state law. Look, I wish it was. I wish we had policy referenda in this state. We could vote on, you know, Medicaid expansion like so many other states have. We could vote on marijuana legalization. We could vote on abortion. But we can't right now. So he is proposing something that is, you know, kick it back to the states and have the states deal with it in a way that is not currently legal in the state. It is ridiculous.
Well, listen, yes, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, to your point earlier, that the Baldwin team is already out, the rapid response team tonight, with actual notations from when Eric Covey said in 2012 on certain programs and certain interviews in 2012 when he was running against Tommy Thompson in a primary, that he was clearly 100% pro-life. But now, instead of saying, hey, you know what? I'm a mature person. We learn and grow. I've decided to, you know, adjust my position and just say that. He tries to just say, no, I never said that. When in fact, it is in stone writing and video that he did.
To be fair, people's views can and do evolve. I mean, maybe he could be doing a better job of owning up to that. I do think this whole proposal of state-by-state referendums is just a way to, avoid taking ownership. And Republicans know that they own an unpopular issue. And, and this is what they decided the response is going to be, this sort of invention of state-by-state referenda as a solution, whereas Dan points out it really isn't legally possible. It's just a theoretical answer to the question, and it's, it would sound perhaps to be a bit of a dodge.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely correct on that. Well stated, Terry Bell. Dan, I'm interested. Is there anything on your note card where you think that Eric Hovde got a win or did particularly well tonight?
It's hard to say. It's hard to say who exactly he was going for with this. Is he trying to? He made those repeated accusations about Baldwin's partner. Real subtle there. Eric Hovde, bringing up her partner over and over again.
Yeah.
I guess we're just going to remind people that, I guess while we're reminding people of things about Tammy Baldwin making history as the first openly gay U.S. senator, passing the act in, codifying rights for gay marriage and doing it in a way that was not to score political points, but to actually get the bill passed. Maybe we could talk about that aspect of her career and groundbreaking, pioneer, trailblazing elements of her record on those types of rights too. Eric Hovde has been painted across the campaign as an out of touch, part-time Wisconsinite, California business owner. And I don't think he really dissuaded any people who are watching tonight of that caricature of him. It just seemed to be pretty on the nose for those types of criticisms.
Well, didn't it say I think one of my takeaways personally, as if I may interject a personal opinion, is I don't think either candidate really pulled way ahead tonight. I don't think anybody came away from this debate with a different opinion than they had going in.
No, I would say, Dan, you can speak for yourself. I think you're largely correct, Terry. Like I said, I think the big headline of the night is Tammy Baldwin saying, stay out of my personal life on behalf of all Wisconsin women. And it's a super minor point as someone who got candidates prepped for debates before and have been in the business for a long time and before I got out. But I thought that, and again, it's one of those things like, did you listen to it on civic media or did you watch it or whatever? I thought that Senator Baldwin looked like maybe she was fighting some hay fever or something like that. So I thought she looked tired, maybe partly because she's been on the campaign trail so much. I thought that her answers were a little bit more measured, where Eric Hovde came across, to me at least, as maybe a little bit peppier and on the attack tonight. Maybe his team got him ready for that. I don't know, Dan, is that too nuanced?
No, I think Hovde seemed very rehearsed.
Yeah.
There were moments where he kind of had this feigned incredulous response to, oh my goodness, how could you possibly say that? And it seemed so inauthentic and it seemed rehearsed. And I think, you mentioned about Tammy Baldwin. I just don't think I think there are certain strengths that she has as a senator. And I think in the most recent Marquette University Law School poll, one of the things that more than 60% of voters in that poll agreed on is that she's working for Wisconsinites, that she has a connection for Wisconsinites. And I think if you step back and take a big picture view of who Tammy Baldwin has been as a senator. You know, I think her hallmark has been in constituent services and really working for Wisconsin. And I think trying to be this generation's Herb Kohl in a lot of ways. You know, that was certainly a hallmark of his time as a senator as well. She's talked, you know, she talked in the past about him being her, you know, her idol in the Senate. And but I don't think, you know, that necessarily always translates to somebody who's very deep in the weeds on the issues, who's very, you know, oriented to, you know, that type of constituent services. It doesn't always translate to, you know, a very kind of like sparkling speech or a snappy line or anything like that. But I think that it's important to remember that about Baldwin. And I'm going to go again to that PFAS contamination question where, you know, the moderator asked a detailed question, not the type of question you often get in a U.S. Senate debate that is going to really get to a very, you know, nuanced issue like this. And that was one that she was able to just jump right in on and really give a detailed, specific answer on. And Hovde clearly wasn't.
I thought the fact that she brought up a little bit of her constituent service there was really important. If I'm Baldwin's staff tonight, I'm saying, man, why didn't she talk more about this constituent service? I think you nailed it, Dan, because, you know, there are still a few Republicans that talk to me, even though I left the party. But here's the dirty secret inside some of Republican politics in Wisconsin I'll let our listeners in on. I'm not going to name them, but there are high-ranking Republicans, some of which still hold office in the state of Wisconsin, when people call them for things like passports or immigration visas, this type of thing, the Republican state legislator tells them to call Tammy Baldwin's office, not Ron Johnson's office, because Tammy Baldwin's office is known for actually getting stuff done, being timely, and delivering results. And every Republican who's listening to me knows I'm 100% true, but they'll never tell it to you on the record.
You're absolutely right about that. I joke about this sometimes that Wisconsin just has one U.S. senator because, you know, when there are those issues with the federal government, it is so often Tammy Baldwin who is delivering for Wisconsinites and really, you know, connecting the dots on a lot of these different things, bringing projects home to Wisconsin. I thought that the talk about the bipartisan infrastructure law, I think, was, you know, revelatory in that sense in this debate as well.
This is going to be the one and only Senate debate in all likelihood. Eric Hovde has asked for more. Senator Baldwin has not really been inclined to accept any of those invitations. Let's say hypothetically that there was one or two more Senate debates. You know, is there anything you would want to hear or you would recommend that the candidates talk about?
Yeah, I would like to see one based particularly on those watching on the stream tonight and a lot of listeners. I think there should be a debate that is moderated by Pam Jahnke of the Midwest Farm Report that airs on the Civic Media Radio Network. And Pam Jahnke should do an entire debate on the farm bill. Lots of comments tonight on the stream that when this farm bill came up, and this is essential, not just for your typical farmer, but for rural communities who rely on the farming economics for their towns, for people who have grocery stores. I mean, it's a trickle-down effect throughout Wisconsin. And the fact that Eric Hovde, you guys can keep me honest, this is the quote that I wrote down. He said, quote, "I'm not an expert on the farm bill because I'm not in the U.S. Senate," unquote. I thought that was really telling to basically say, I don't really know what I'm talking about here, and then tried to launch into something that his staff clearly had, you know, prepped him on. And he kind of went into that Trumpism. I've been on farms. I've been on so many farms. There's so many farms. I have the greatest farms. I'm exaggerating a bit, but that was the standard line. I've been on so many farms. Meanwhile, we know that, and this is one of the things I thought, Dan, that Senator Baldwin left on the table, amongst many of her accomplishments, she brought $3.5 million this year, this past year and a half, to Wisconsin for dairy business. Here's someone who's not just been on farms, she's actually brought home the bacon, or in some cases, the dairy.
Yeah, and I think, you know, another thing that is really stands out to me for this is, you know, she mentioned this in the debate as well, but she's the first Democrat running in a statewide race to get the endorsement from the Wisconsin Farm Bureau in more than 20 years.
That's huge.
And it's huge. And I think it says something about the type of campaign that she's running and about her opponent. I mean, I think, typically you might think of, Republicans have a lot of representatives in the Assembly and Senate in very rural areas. And it has been a long time, as they indicated in this endorsement, since they have endorsed a statewide Democrat. I think it is telling about Tammy Baldwin, and I think it is telling about Eric Hovde, especially in his kind of clueless response tonight in what that endorsement exactly means.
I think you're so right, Dan. And Senator Baldwin brought this up in her response tonight. One of the main reasons that we do not have a new farm bill, one of the main reasons it has not passed Congress and Joe Biden signed it into law, are because the House Republicans gut, in her words, eviscerated school lunch programs. And we have, a guy in Derek Van Orten on the western side of the state who goes around bragging about he's on the Ag Committee, but yet he can't help get a bill passed in the House of Representatives, Dan. And it would seem a little hollow for Eric Hovde and the MAGA folks to go around and complain. I mean, I don't know too many people in Wisconsin that are like, I just wish those school lunch programs would go away so my kids would be hungry.
I wonder, to just get back to the Hovde's answer on this, what would the response be like if a Democrat said they don't really know about the farm? Do you think that would be immediately in attack ads? They would be saying that over and over. And I think, and that's part of it. You broke it down great there.
We just have a few minutes left to go in the broadcast. Going forward now, I guess, how much has this debate changed the race? Yes or no? And, what does each candidate have to do? Again, very close, anywhere from 2 to 4 points, depending on which poll you're looking at. It's much has been made about the fundraising, the spending, how much Eric Hovde has put his own money into the race. How are things looking for these two candidates, over the next 2.5 weeks? We don't have much time left.
If I might, gentlemen, let me give you, for those fans out there, a John McLaughlin answer. On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being no change at all, 10 being metaphysical change, how much effect did this debate have tonight on the U.S. Wisconsin Senate race? The correct answer, 1.
Okay.
I ask you, Dan Schaefer.
I think I think it's close to 1. I'll go with like a 3, I guess.
All right. I ask you, Terry Bell.
I would say probably 0.5.
0.5. There you go. No, I'm not trying to make too much light of it, but I think the most telling, the only place that I felt I learned or the voters learned something was the Ukraine answer. I think that you're Dan right. I think also the women's reproductive right answer. Clearly, Eric Hovde, made differences there. The farm bill, I think that's another one where we learned that, Eric Hovde is a big difference between the two candidates there. But a serious answer to your serious question, Terry, I think just keep being themselves, right? I think Tammy Baldwin, Dan, you've seen this, I think, in your reporting across the state. She's someone who's been out there. And during my time in politics, they always said, you don't win a race the year of the election. You win it the year before that. How much are you actually going out and being there for your constituents, being around your district, in this case, the state? Because voters will ultimately remember that more than they do your 30-second ads 2 weeks before a race. And in my estimation, Tammy Baldwin has been somewhere who goes around the state tirelessly. Trigvi Olson, our co-host sometimes on our show, who's from River Falls, he has, as he calls them, his beer-drinking buddies up there who tend to vote Republican, but they're also big Tammy supporters. And this might sound trite, but it's true. The main reason is they said, you know what? She comes up here and goes in the bar, and guess what? She finishes her beer before she leaves. She's a real Wisconsinite. And sometimes those things, Dan, you know this better than anybody, sometimes it's those tangential connections in a race like this that is tight, that ultimately when a person has to vote behind closed doors or closed curtains, that's what counts.
You're right. She has done better than most Democrats in different parts of the state, rural areas, swing areas. One of the examples that I always think about is in 2018, when she was reelected, she won in the Fox Valley and the Green Bay area in the same four counties, Winnebago, Outagamie, Brown, and Door, that Scott Walker won in. And I think she wins in places that sometimes Democrats don't. And look, yes, this is a close race. I think we've seen some of the national prognosticators move it from a lean Democrat race to a toss-up. I think it probably always should have been a toss-up. Wisconsin in a presidential year, things are always going to be close. Hovde's getting a ton of cash to support his campaign, so we know this is going to be close, but I think he needed to do a certain job with the debate tonight, and I don't think he did it.
That will do it for our broadcast of the U.S. Senate debate in Wisconsin. Our thanks to the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association, everyone behind the scenes, for Todd Aubaugh, Dan Schaefer, and all of us here at Civic Media. I'm Terry Bell. Have a good night.
Civic Media News, I'm Derek Tritz. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. A Milwaukee attorney has been sentenced to 16 months in federal prison for millions of dollars in tax evasion. The U.S. Attorney's Office said Eric Lenzen pleaded guilty for not paying over $2.4 million in income taxes between 2016 and 2021. Lenzen was ordered to pay restitution plus penalties and interest. A large Fox Valley shopping center has a new owner. Lisa Hale reports.
The Shops at Oshkosh, also known as the Outlet Mall, just off of I-41, has been purchased by a company that's owned by Woodman's Corporation, a large grocery store chain headquartered in Janesville. Oshkosh City Manager Mark Roloff says the city doesn't know what the plan for the site is, but Woodman's had been looking at the area for about 5 years. I'm Lisa Hale.
And that's what you need to know. I'm Derek Tritz, and this is Civic Media News.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. The Apprentice, starring Sebastian Stan, has caused some controversy and generated the ire of Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump. Trump and his team tried to prevent the film from coming out altogether. Stan says that's hypocritical, as the candidate has been touting free speech. The Apprentice follows Trump in the early days of his business ventures. The film received good reviews and is currently in theaters. Remember when we used to order DVDs from Netflix through the mail, and there were times the company was struggling to survive? Those days are long gone. Netflix added 5 million users in the third quarter of this year alone. The company is projecting its earnings to be $43 billion in 2025. That's a growth of 11-13%, according to Variety, and about $5 million more than last year. The streaming platform now has 282 million users. This must mean lower prices for subscribers, right? Hello? Is this mic on? For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight, a low in the low 40s. And mostly sunny for tomorrow, a high into the low 70s. Sunny, warmer, and upper 70s on Sunday. Temps stay above average to start next week, as highs stay in the 70s. It's 55 right now.
The Todd Aubaugh Show.
Minority Rule. The author is Ari Berman.
If you look back at Wisconsin history, it gave rise to Social Security and an unemployment insurance and collective bargaining. It really personified the idea that no matter what political party you were with, government should work for the common good. And Walker had a very different idea, that government should work for this conservative elite instead.
The Todd Aubaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Christina Reynolds of Emily's List. Donald Trump had a quasi-town hall.
There were two questions, one on abortion and one on IVF. What he did was claim he just wanted the states to get to decide, and it is a lie. When they call it a national minimum standard, they are saying we want the federal government to get to decide and not you.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
On Monday's show, we'll find out what 9-year-old podcaster Beckett Kay's got to say about Sunday's game.
And we'll check in with Mike Pritzel and get an update on hurricane relief efforts in Florida. Join us.
Weekday mornings 6 till 9.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Aneen, I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Strong Hearts Native Helpline. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and Strong Hearts offers culturally appropriate support and advocacy for Native Americans. You can call or text them anytime at 1-844-7-NATIVE or chat online at stronghearts.helpline.org.
Well, we're back with our friend, State Senator Mary Kunish. And Mary, I just wanted to kind of just finish up on our thoughts about Connie Walker. And again, thank you so much for that. I'm not a big murder mystery one, but this one really, really had me and wondered what's going on. And like you alluded to, I felt sorry for the people that were left after this whole ordeal with Cleo.
Yeah. There's so many layers and so many relationships that are still feeling the pain and the disconnection that happened because of those boarding schools and adoption and that sort of thing. And I didn't know this, but when you mentioned that she had other podcasts, Connie Walker, I looked them up, and I'm really interested in them. I think she must have a series called Stolen, and there's three of them. One is The Search for Jermaine. The other is Surviving St. Michael's. And then another one is Trouble in Sweetwater. Mm-hmm. And so I will be very curious about those, and we'll have to take a listen pretty soon.
Definitely amazing, too. And when we were talking about it, I wouldn't feel bad about revisiting Finding Cleo. It's such an amazing work.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, again, I learned so much here from all our guests, and that was a big Easter egg that you gave me to watch and listen to that. I fought it for a while because, you know, I'm going, well, and it's funny, too, State Senator, I was looking up a podcast, and I was looking it up in a different way, and like famous Native podcasts, and on a one of these pages, our Native Roots Radio is up there. So,
wow,
yeah, well, it's because guests like you and producers like Haley that have kept this show afloat,
yeah,
in a good way.
Good,
so, yeah, and what else is going on? So we know. Politically, the thing that happened in Georgia a couple days ago with 400,000 voters coming out right away, and that's always good for the Democratic Party because Trump wants them to stay home and make it seem really weird that he was ahead, and then they counted the absentee votes, and then he loses. So it's kind of his game plan, but it was great to see those numbers.
Yeah, I have a feeling that there are a lot of people that are voting earlier than the actual day of the elections. Partly, I think they're not quite sure. I did hear from an older community member who is voting early because she just is worried about what might be happening on election day. And if she can go in there now and do her duty, then she won't have to worry about that. And of course, here in Minnesota, we don't know what the weather's going to be like in November. So,
I mean,
it's supposed to be like
storm.
80 degrees next week.
Wow.
And but that could quickly change in just a few weeks as well. So yeah, I think we are seeing a lot of folks get out there and get it off their plate. There always is about this time voter fatigue, election fatigue, and the rhetoric isn't getting any more pleasant, shall we say. And so I think people just want it to be done as usual. But, you know, I can't not say I hope all of you in Indian country have your plan to get out and vote. I know we know that there are many, many folks that there are all kinds of impediments and barriers to voting, whether it's the distance, whether the location is not a friendly location or one that you can get to easily. Every state has a little bit different laws or rules around voting. For example, in North Dakota, you don't have to register to vote. You can just go in and vote and have your ID. And if your address doesn't match your ID, then have the documents to prove that you live where you live. So know who to vote for, where to vote for, and how to vote in the best way. And hopefully we aren't going to see any of those efforts to squelch voting in Indian country like they've had in the past, because we remember, I think it was the indigenous people were the one that really at the end of the day helped put Biden into the presidency. And we're going to need all of that help with Kamala Harris this time around too.
Absolutely. It was reported today, I heard, that 500,000 voters in Minnesota requested absentee ballot, and 300,000 have been in. And some early voting is also just the day before, too. You can do that. Mm-hmm. So that's something to know, too. But that's amazing, 500,000 requests for absentee votes here in Minnesota.
Yeah, you can vote now. You can vote early here in Minnesota right up through Election Day. I won't say vote early and often. I'll just say vote early.
That's an old Chicago term.
Yes, yeah.
Vote early and vote often. Wendy and I voted early.
Did you?
Yeah.
I usually wait until Election Day. I like to get in there early and see what number I am, which number voter I am. Sort of greet those early birds and thank all the voting judges, the election judges that are there, because if they're there for, they're there the entire day. My sister is an election judge in North Dakota, and they have to be there at some like ungodly hour and stay all the way through the end. And, we can't thank those that put in those a full day like that. Or any of them that are working at the polls now where there's early voting. Appreciate all that work and dedication to democracy. Absolutely. Well,
it was really funny. It was a few days ago. I want to say it was Monday or Tuesday we went, and the person that greeted us, I go, "How are you doing?" He goes, "Oh, my God, don't ask." And then we got in there and, in and out in 20 minutes maybe max. But I heard from one of the workers that there was a line around the block just a half hour before we got there.
Oh, wow.
So that's exciting. We went to that voting place on Plato across the river in St. Paul. I used to really, really like the day of too, but I'm kind of thinking I really want to help people get to the polls, whether it's giving them rides or, but also we did talk a little bit about, possible things happening on Election Day too that kind of made me take pause.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope it's a smooth election. I hope that whoever the winner is, that there's a nonviolent change turnover to the next administrator. But, come that election, there's going to be a lot of changes for Minnesota when Kamala Harris becomes our next president and our Governor Walz becomes our next vice president.
Yeah.
And that means Minnesota will have the very first American Indian and very first woman as our governor, which is in so many ways incredible.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible. And then just by progression of the way that our Constitution is, we will also end up with our first African-American at that level of administration in the state by Senator Bobby Joe Champion, who is currently the president of our Senate. He automatically moves to the lieutenant governor seat. So we'll have our first Native American, our first African-American as a governor, lieutenant governor, and in like one swoop. It'll be incredible.
That is incredible. That, yeah. And I always feel like we really are blessed here to live in Minnesota for a lot of reasons. And politics has been one of the reasons over the years. I mean, I've always kind of watched politics, whether it was Hubert Humphrey, Walter Mondale, Wendy Anderson. I don't know if you remember the governor, Wendell Anderson. And
yep.
All these champions of Minnesota and good deeds that became national politicians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's Minnesota has really sent some real gems to our national capital.
Yeah,
and I think that I think Tim Walz will serve us well. Mm-hmm. He will serve Kamala Harris well, and I think Kamala Harris is going to bring a different kind of leadership to our national capital and for the people of the United States. Mm-hmm. I'm really excited to hopefully, knock on wood, have that happen, because if the former president gets in there, some of the things he's saying is really scary. I mean, even in agriculture for farmers,
yeah.
The tariffs that he's proposing will just devastate, especially small farmers, family-owned farmers. The car dealerships, you know, the tariffs that he wants to bring in for against China, you know, we're not going to be able to, we won't have cars to purchase. And then, you know, there's just a lot of things that, I don't know, I feel like he just says off the cuff and doesn't really have any meat behind the matter. And if you look at that playbook that they've been talking about, there's a lot that worries me about it in there.
Well, I think the polls are wrong, and they're underestimating the woman vote, and especially with you know, what happened in the Supreme Court. I really feel like the day of reckoning is coming, and should be. So, State Senator, thank you so much for this. Yep. Really great to see you and listened and talked about all the great work that you do for the state of Minnesota. Big pinigigi, thank you.
Yeah, wopila tanka.
Hey, this is Native Roots Radio. Up next, Haley and I talking about weekend events and whatever comes to our mind. Ho-wa.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis AIR. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune into Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
Fossil fuel camps, like pipeline and oil drilling villages, are increasing violence against our indigenous sisters. Temporary workers from these camps have led to a surge in sexual assaults. In North Dakota, assaults on women rose by 75% after man camps arrived during the 2000s oil boom. We must hold big oil companies accountable for this violence and demand action. By electing leaders that prioritize the health and safety of our indigenous communities, we can fight back. Our vote is our voice. It's time to use it to protect our people, stand up for climate justice, and ensure a safe future for our next generations. Make Voting a Tradition, or MVAT, is about strengthening our Native communities. MVAT is here to boost our voter turnout and spark important conversations about the issues that matter most to us. Find your early voting location at sos.state.mn.us. Let's make voting a tradition so we can fight for the safety of our communities.
Everyone likes a litter-free ride on Metro Transit buses and trains, so pitch in. Take pride in your ride and take your trash off with you when you get off at your stop. You'll find trash bins at every Metro station. Want to help clean up transit stops in your neighborhood? Join the hundreds who volunteer to adopt a stop and keep it picked up. Learn more at metrotransit.org/adopt-a-stop. That's metrotransit.org/adopt-a-stop.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Howl- oh! Good one. Hey, it's Friday, and what a great show and great guests, and we just want to give a big shout out. We really appreciate people supporting Native Roots Radio, not only in a good way, but also as a guest to really bring out the word of what's happening all over. And, you know, Deb Holland's from Arizona, right? Or she's from down
New Mexico.
South, New Mexico. Same thing to a Midwestern guy, right? Texas.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Texas. We're all the same, but different. And that's what makes us unique. And, I used to tell students that that thought they were really unique in their dress and the way they handled themselves. I said, "Wow, you're unique, just like everybody else."
Aww. I like when people do their own little thing. But I know. I think Deb is Pueblo of Laguna, New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot of different tribes, I think, like down in the southern states. I know we have 11 tribal nations here in Minnesota. Wisconsin has 12. But man, I was even thinking the other day how many tribal nations are recognized in the state of California alone.
Yeah,
it's exactly. More than that.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. I don't know if you saw this on TikTok, but a friend of mine that I work with, son, in Forest Lake, went to everyone his teachers and asked him how many tribes are in the United States, recognized tribes.
Did you say Forest Lake, where I grew up and went to school?
Yeah. Or no.
They asked the teachers there?
Or White Bear Lake. I'm sorry, White Bear Lake.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I would have said I wouldn't have been surprised if they didn't know. But
well, it was the same thing. They didn't know. They were guessing 5 and 10.
I know.
Even once at 100.
Oh, gosh.
And
There's
457 recognized tribes.
I thought there was like 574.
Well, see, there you go.
Exactly.
They're growing every day.
Yeah. Well, I think too, like, I forgot. I think what I was going to say, actually.
That happens to me a lot, but usually you finish my sentences for me. So that's a scary thing there.
It's Haley. Fun Friday.
Yeah, it is. Hey, there's a couple of people we want to give a shout out to. Before we get really serious about getting out the vote and doing the voting and vote. All right, That's enough seriousness for now. But got a couple friends out there with birthdays coming up and this weekend things happening.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, we got to do a big Native Roots birthday shout out to our friend Annie Humphrey of Leech Lake Tribal Nation here in Minnesota. Annie's been on the show before with a good friend David Huckfelt. She is a longtime artist, musician, and they're doing she's been on the show with David in the past month, I think, talking about Fire in the Village. And Fire in the Village is a collective group of singers, artists, screen printing that is traveling around the Midwest here the past month and then up until the end of November, so up through next month. But they've got a couple shows going on tonight on Annie's birthday. So Ho-Chene Hump K. Beske, happy birthday, Annie Humphrey. They're going to be in Ashland, Wisconsin tonight, Friday.
Oh,
I know. What a great place to be. I know we got a lot of friends, relatives, and allies up in that area.
And listeners.
Yeah, that's true. So shout out to everyone listening up in that area.
if you are hearing this, hopefully you can make it over to Fire in the Villages show in Ashland, Wisconsin today, Friday. And then they'll be in Sandstone, Minnesota tomorrow night on Saturday. And if you're looking for those venue locations, you could follow David_HuckFelt, HuckFelt on Instagram, or Fire in the Village on Facebook and Instagram as well. I know that they got their tour dates and locations up on there, but it's fun. I know I went to the opening here in St. Paul at the Turf Club at their start of their tour, and they do a fashion show as well. So it's not only just live music and screen printing, but the whole fashion show.
Yeah, that's cool. And I know you went when I was here in St. Paul and had a great time, and it's on, and they've had one since you had the one in St. Paul, and it seems like it's just growing and successful, and we give them a big shout out. And Annie Humphrey, the singer, has one of the most distinct, cool voices that I've ever really heard, and I have a bunch of her stuff here.
Yeah, she's very lovely. Very, very cool human being, too. So yeah, check out Fire in the Village. I know they'll be back in the Twin Cities at the end of November. They're doing kind of like a decolonized Thanksgiving show, and that'll be in Minneapolis. Again, you can follow Fire in the Village on Facebook and Instagram for that location, because I can't remember right now.
Yeah, you know, I always like to call Thanksgiving Thanks-taking. So we give thanks in them taking all our land. Thanks-taking.
Yeah, it's a different feel for us as natives, for sure. But there's a lot of good people in community that are kind of holding our own time around that day as well.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, what else is going on? I know my He News got some news that she gave you.
Yes, this is New Native Theater. They have an upcoming show. This is called Fallen Star, The Watchovers, written by Ramon Esquivel. And yeah, this is New Native Theater's next show. When is this starting here? It's going to be running through October 30th. Through November 3rd. And I guess this is going to be at the Minneapolis American Indian Center. Again, New Native Theater. Yeah, Fallen Star, The Watchovers, October 30th through the 3rd.
That's cool. And didn't they just have was it a 10 or 15 year anniversary? I can't remember. New Native Theater.
15th.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep. So on here, they have different days. So October 30th at 7 p.m., the Minneapolis American Indian Center. That'll be, I guess, the opening show. There's going to be a show on, I guess, Halloween, October 31st at 7 p.m. And you can wear a costume to that showing, and you can get a New Native Theater 15th year anniversary gift.
Oh.
I know. Cool. They always have such great ideas.
Am I too old to, like, dress up as a Major League Baseball player, or would that be fun?
No, that's, like, iconic.
I think
you really should do that.
Or if I don't do that, I'll be a road warrior with a baseball bat. I don't know. You're too young to know that movie, but that was a movie in the 70s, Gangs in New York.
Yeah,
One of the gangs wore a baseball jersey, but it's hard talking to a Gen Zer sometimes.
Oh, wow. It is. Sometimes I don't always get your joke. Like, what was it? The Hertz donut? And I was like, oh, those are good.
Yeah. I gave Haley a Hertz donut, and good thing I'm ahead of HR here, because I hit her on her shoulder and I said, Hertz donut. And
I'm like, yeah, I like those donuts.
Yeah.
Those are good donuts.
Good thing I'm running HR, because your complaint came to me and I filed it in accordingly.
Oh, okay. Well, did you do it? Yeah, alphabetically and
yeah, in the trash, alphabetically. Oh, okay. Exactly. Okay. That's the file. Hey, so what else we got going? We got like a minute left here. I know there's we got something going on next week, next Monday too. A couple rock solid guests as usual.
Yes, we're going to be joined on Monday by Maria Izza and Natani Means. We're going to be talking, or I guess promoting their show. This is a free admission show on October 26th. It's Our Voices Restored. It'll be in Bemidji. It's at the Sanford Center Ballroom in Bemidji, Minnesota, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. So it's kind of a whole thing. You're going to, you can expect a rally for community empowered events, featuring live performances, speakers, resources, breakout sessions, and more. So we'll be talking about that on Monday. But otherwise, the American Indian Family Center will be doing something this weekend, beginning every other Saturday from 1 to 3, some car workshops. It's called Life Skills for Youth, and you can learn more at the American Indian Family Center's website.
Awesome. Hey, have a good weekend, Haley. I just want to say, if you guys see us in the community, just give us a big ho-wa.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Travel Wisconsin's Logan Rogie, who joins the show to discuss fall hotspots in our beautiful state. And we'll go back to the future with a discussion about Back to the Future.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.